All right, let's dive in. Today, we're taking a look at a contract law case. Pretty interesting one, actually. It really highlights the whole issue of like when something unexpected happens, can you actually get out of a deal? You know, what are those situations where you're like legally off the hook? And the case we're unpacking is Sites v. Markolite. You know, we've got some great material lined up for you guys, like some detailed briefs on the case itself, plus, you know, some expert analysis to really give us the full story.
Yeah, I think what's so fascinating about this case, right, is it really cuts through the legal jargon. It gets to the core of these crucial factors that determine if something happens, some external thing, do you actually have a legitimate way out of a contract?
Yeah, I mean, contracts, right? They're like the foundation of so much of our lives, business deals, personal agreements, you name it. They're meant to give us that sense of predictability. But I think we all know life rarely goes according to plan, right? And this is where Sites v. Markolite comes in, providing, you know, like a really good roadmap for how the law actually deals with these moments when like stuff hits the fan.
Right, exactly. And you know what? I think it's super relevant for anyone who's ever, signed a contract or especially if you're drafting one, gives you a lot to think about.
For sure. Okay, so let's jump into the specifics. So we've got George Seitz, who hired Markolite Sign Contractors. These guys were supposed to, you know, give his theater marquee a bit of a makeover. The price tag, $12,800. Seitz even, you know, put down a deposit to get things started. Seems pretty straightforward so far, right?
Yeah, totally. Typical transaction, until, of course, it wasn't.
Right, exactly. So here's where things take a turn. Markolite tries to back out of the deal, and their reason. Well, their Starsheet metal worker, guy named Al Jorgensen, his diabetes starts acting up, gets pretty serious.
And this is where we stumble upon that famous clause, the force majeure clause.
Ah, yes, the force majeure, the get out of jail free card, some might say.
Well, not so fast. It's not always that simple. So
Yeah.
Markolite, they had this clause in their contract, right? And it listed, the usual suspects like labor strikes, fires, floods, acts of God. And then they had this catch-all phrase at the end, other causes beyond our control.
And I'm guessing this is where they tried to shoehorn Jorgensen's illness.
Go. Their argument was basically, hey, this wasn't our fault. We couldn't have predicted it. Totally beyond our control, right?
But the court didn't buy it.
Nope. And a big reason for that was this legal principle called adjustum generis.
Okay, adjustum generis. That sounds pretty intimidating. Could you break that down for us? You know, what does that actually mean in plain English?
Sure. So adjustum generis, it's basically a rule of interpretation, right? When you've got a contract and it's got a list of specific things, and then it's followed by a general phrase, that general phrase, it's only meant to cover things that are similar to those specific things listed before.
Yeah, I think I see where you're going with this. So it's like, you know, if I say apples, bananas, and oranges, and then say other fruits, I probably wouldn't be talking about like a watermelon, right? Even though it is a fruit.
Well, watermelon is definitely a fruit. But yeah, I see your point. It's about context and category. So in Markolite's case, right, they list all these major disruptions, right? These huge unforeseen events, natural disasters, labor strikes, things like that. And then they try to lump in a personal health issue. Didn't quite fit, according to the court.
Yeah, I guess a diabetic episode, even a serious one, it doesn't quite have the same catastrophic impact as, say, a hurricane wiping out your entire workforce, right?
Right. That's the gist of it. The court really emphasized that Jorgensen's diabetes, it was a gradual condition. It wasn't like a sudden, unforeseen event. Like they even compared it to a heart attack or stroke, something that just happens out of the blue.
So that element of suddenness, it seems like that was really important for the court, right? It wasn't just about it being beyond their control, but also how abruptly and unexpectedly it happened.
Absolutely. So if you're listening to this right and you're ever looking at a force majeure clause, don't just, skim over it. Pay attention to those specific examples. They really set the stage for how a court's going to interpret that broader language later on.
And for those of you drafting contracts, I guess the lesson here is be specific, right? If you want to cover things like employee illness, actually write that in there. Don't just rely on some vague catch-all phrase.
Totally. Spell it out. Leave no room for ambiguity.
Okay, so the force majeure argument, it didn't fly. But Markolite had another trick up their sleeve.
Yay.
They also tried to claim that it was impossible for them to do the work because their star employee was out of commission.
Yep, that's right. They argued that Jorgensen was so essential to the job, so skilled that without him, it was literally impossible to fulfill the contract.
But the court didn't buy that either.
Nope. They shut that one down too. And their reasoning was twofold. First, the contract itself didn't say anything about Jorgensen being the only one who could do the work. There was no language that tied the agreement specifically to him. And secondly, the court pointed out that sheet metal work, yeah, requires skill, sure, but it's not some, like, unique, one-of-a-kind talent. It's not like they hired a world-famous artist to paint a mural, right? Where only that specific person could do it.
Yeah, I get it. So finding another sheet metal worker, even if it meant, like, higher costs for Markolite, it wasn't impossible. It was just inconvenient, right?
Right. And this is where we get into this whole concept of objective impossibility versus subjective impossibility. Objective impossibility, that means that literally no one could do it. Like, if the theater burned down before they could even start work on the marquee, that's objectively impossible. But subjective impossibility, that's just about the specific promiser. They can't do it, but someone else could.
So Markolite's situation, it fell into that subjective impossibility category. Tough luck for them, but not a get-out-of-jail-free card in the eyes of the law.
Exactly. And this highlights a really important point about fixed-price contracts. When you sign on the dotted line for a set price, you're basically absorbing the risk. If things get more expensive or more difficult than you anticipated, well, that's on you. The court actually quoted a legal principle here, and it's pretty straightforward. One who agrees to do, for a fixed sum, a thing possible to be performed, he will not be excused or become entitled to additional compensation because unforeseen difficulties are encountered.
Yeah, that's a tough lesson, but an important one. Just because things get tough doesn't mean you can just back out of a deal.
Contracts are meant to be binding, right? They need to have some teeth. Otherwise, what's the point?
Now, there's another interesting twist in this case, right? Markolite actually returned Seitz's deposit. How did the court see that move?
Well, they saw that as basically a signal that Markolite had no intention of honoring the contract. This is called anticipatory breach, or sometimes repudiation. Basically, they were saying, we're out of here, before they were even technically supposed to start the work.
And what happens when you pull a move like that? Legally speaking, I mean.
Well, it gives the other party, the non-breaching party, the right to sue for damages right away. They don't have to wait around to see if you actually fail to perform. In this case, Seitz was able to go out, find another contractor, and then sue Markolite for the difference in cost.
Which is exactly what he did. Ended up costing him an extra $7,200 to hire someone else, and that's what he got back from Markolite. Those are what we call expectation damages, right?
Yeah.
The idea is to put the injured party in the same position they would have been in if the contract had been fulfilled.
Right. They're meant to compensate for the loss of the bargain, so to speak.
So to sum things up for our listeners, what are the biggest takeaways from Sykes v. Markolite? What should they be thinking about when it comes to their own agreements?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway is that courts really value certainty in contracts. Unless you can show that it was truly impossible for anyone to perform the work and that the duty couldn't be delegated, or unless you have a super specific force majeure clause that covers the exact situation that arose, you're likely going to be held to your promises.
Right. So basically two main outs.
Yeah.
Either it's impossible or your force majeure clause is airtight.
Yeah. And I think for anyone working with contracts, whether you're a business owner or a freelancer, whatever, the practical implications are huge. Be careful with those force majeure clauses. Think through all the what ifs, especially when it comes to personnel. And make sure you really understand the risks of fixed price agreements before you sign on.
And in the end, Markolite learned that the hard way.
Okay. Right?
Their star employee getting sick, it was a setback for sure. But it didn't meet the legal standard for getting out of the contract. They made a deal and they were held to it.
Yeah, they bore the risk and ultimately the cost.
So as you think about this case, I want you to consider this. In our world today, so many jobs require specialized skills. It's not always easy to just find a replacement. So does this case and the principles it lays out, do they still hold up? Do we need to rethink how we draft contracts, especially in those highly specialized fields, to account for situations where key personnel might become unavailable? How do we allocate risk in a way that's fair and protects everyone involved? These are questions worth pondering. And remember, right, folks, those fine print clauses, they're not just legal mumbo jumbo. They can have real world consequences. Understanding them could save you a lot of headaches down the road.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Contracts are serious business, folks. Treat them that way.